You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit. Hello, you're listening to Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM. I am Brandon Fragmenti.
And it's your boy Graham Hutchings. Thank you for joining us. If you're tuning in for the first time, I'd like to welcome you all in the Windsor, Essex County areas, maybe across the river in Wayne County and adjoining counties, wherever our radio waves are hitting you. Just give you a quick recap of what our organization, Pro Bono, is all about. Brandon and I are Windsor Law students, and since Windsor Law has a focus on social justice, pro bono fits in perfectly with its work to match law student volunteers with organizations to deliver legal services which are of great need but lack sufficient resources to retain legal counsel.
All pro bono projects operate under the supervision of a lawyer, so you know they're legit. Pro bono not only provides law students with volunteer opportunities to develop legal skills, but also has a positive impact on the legal profession.
So if you're just tuning in for the first time and thinking, geez, how do I gotta get caught up on this? Well, you can find any past episodes of Pro Bono Radio online at www.cjam.ca in the archives. And before we get into discussing any legal topics, we just want to come right out and let you know that anything said on the show is exclusively our opinions and does not reflect CJAM as a radio station. Should also advise you, despite the opinion of most of my neighbors these days, I am not yet a lawyer. And neither is Brandon.
Or family on reading week, maybe. Or,
yeah.
We're not lawyers yet.
Nowhere close.
Hopefully one day.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
I've been called to many bars, but, you know, not...
not the one you want.
Not the one I want. Well, sometimes the one I want.
I guess that's true. So what are we talking about today, Graham?
I'm so glad you asked, Brandon. See, normally we like to focus on a specific project, you know, that Pro Bono is doing within the Windsor-Essex area, and kind of bring someone on, get the details of that project. However, most of our listeners may not know that it's actually reading week right now.
Sure is.
And so we kind of wanted to zoom out on the Google Maps a little bit, look at, you know, a couple things we haven't been able to talk about yet but have wanted to talk about.
So are you talking about doing some like more of a macro look at pro bono?
I'm talking about macro. Macro is a hot buzzword. Mm-hmm. We're using it.
We're using it. So what we're going to be talking about is kind of pro bono on an international scale. So we're going to look at what pro bono means to different countries, what organizations are out there and things that they're doing.
That's true. We've also got a good news section. Sometimes we feel like we get, you know, with all these, you know, legal issues, pressing legal issues, we can get a little down. And so we want to hit you with just some good news, good things happening in Windsor.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm excited to hear what you got. You're the good news guy in my life and on this radio station.
Maybe
not the station. There's probably some other good news people, but this show for sure.
I strive to be the good news person in everyone's lives. Touch them all with a bit of good news. We've also got a section called Tech News.
Tech News. Techno News.
Tech.
No, it's a different show. But
no,
we're
going to
be
news.
Talking about some innovations in pro bono, and you'll find out what that means shortly.
That's right.
It's pretty exciting stuff. It's pretty exciting stuff.
We're talking mainframes.
Mainframes and computer chips.
I have a good friend in computer science and was very disappointed to learn. He told me that in modern computers, there is no such thing as a mainframe. Hasn't really been the thing since the early 90s.
So we've been lied to by big computer? Is what
yeah, I'm just more like been lied to by Hackers, the early 90s film starring Matthew Lillard and Angelina Jolie.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if there was a if there's an offshoot storyline in there about pro bono, but had there been, they may have talked about the International Bar Association or the International Pro Bono Association.
I think they mentioned that in the end credits for
sure.
Yeah,
it's definitely like afterwards.
So what do you got for me?
So yeah, you know, I did some research because I was thinking, you know, what does pro bono look like in other countries? Do, you know, the concept goes back, pro bono publico, but what does it look like now? Something I found in my research, so there's the IBA, which is the International Bar Association. They have the International Pro Bono website, and they have some resources on that website, but they also have pro bono declarations, which I thought was interesting.
What's a pro bono declaration?
So there's a few things in here. It's kind of like, not an oath, but it's kind of like detailing things that, that one wishes to strive for, especially within pro bono. So, it starts off, you know, the Council of International Bar Association, the global voice of the legal profession, as I guess dubbed by the International Bar Association. I'm not sure,
but sure.
They seem legit. So A, inspired by a vision of a better, more just world. You know, I can get down with that. There's a lot of them here, so I'm not going to read them all, but there's, you know, affirming the vital role of the legal profession in achieving that vision, advocating that barriers to justice, wherever they exist, should be broken and dismantled as a matter of the highest priority, which I think is important, that is sufficiently vague, but also still a specific vision, because what barriers to justice looks like is different in every country.
Absolutely. There's some of our listeners might not know a lot of the beauty in law, and yes, there is beauty, lies
Absolutely.
In writing things that are sufficiently vague but sufficiently specific. There's a lot of that.
That's where we live right now.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was interesting. That kind of took me there's the law, like the UK Law Society, and they have their whole pro bono, which is similar to us, but they have different things. They have like a toolkit and a manual, which gives a sort of direction to legal professions that might be, or legal professionals that might be undertaking pro bono.
Totally. They got to wear wigs when they do that, right?
I don't know if that – I mean, that's the impression. And I think before they have a game of polo.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's – you know, Downton Abbey, I believe, is the my two people who actually live there. That's the only thing we can take away. but they have this. I thought this was interesting, and I think it would be an interesting opportunity. But they have the National Pro Bono Week,
whoa,
which was conceived in 2001 by the then Attorney General, so from 2018 on, they expanded that to become Justice Week. And
Justice Week.
I know it sounds kind of like a possible Comic-Con for Marvel and DC, but just for justice,
for lawyers,
just for Justice League or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's for lawyers, and we're the real superheroes.
Truly, you know, I will say in defense of lawyers, sometimes I feel like lawyers are like goalies. You know,
go on.
I just mean sometimes you watch a game in a sport and, you know, say the goalie makes 35 saves, but, you know, lets three goals in and ultimately the team loses, you know, 3-2 or something like that. No one remembers those 35 saves. They just remember those three goals that went in. Similarly, you know, lawyers often do have a reputation for being a little greasy, you know.
Or greedy or whatever.
Or whatever. Insert lawyer joke here. But there's a lot of good work being done, you know, at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think that is important to showcase that there are a lot of people, especially with pro bono, which some people might not understand, is a lot of pro bono work is on top of people's practice and their work that they're already doing.
Absolutely. It's for free.
It's for free. And so it's time out of their day, you know, and you know, with those pro bono declarations, it's kind of upholding that, you know, and in practice. So I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Thank you.
I know your sports references.
Yeah, sports.
Everyone knows they're off the hook.
Yay.
So what this Justice Week, which is interesting, so celebrates the pro bono work of legal professionals and support. Which is also important, not just the you know the lawyers' roles, but the support I'd imagine from their assistants or their workers for them, and not just them, but also like the other institutions that really help with like the totality of the issues.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's interesting. Justice Week sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, totally.
And there's like a total 48 events, 24 organizations across 17 countries. So,
dang, are we one of them?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Heck
United
yeah.
States, Canada. There's a few, and it looks like Chile, South America.
Chile.
All the way over to South Korea.
Dang.
And bringing it to South Korea, because I had a little journey. It was like a journey through international pro bono. Asia has a pro bono conference as well. And theirs was began in 2012 in Laos. And again, celebrates and emphasizes pro bono work. And so that's really interesting. But then I dug a little deeper.
He's a digger, this guy.
I know. I love my research, you know.
Yeah.
If I could just research this kind of stuff as a job. That's a job. Is that a job somewhere?
That's a job.
That's a job?
Yeah, you can do
research
that as a
lawyer, stuff for radio.
My man. Oh, for radio specifically.
Just for this specifically.
Yeah. You could be the guy who like does the background research on Hot Ones or something.
True, I could do that.
Yeah.
Or just get a sweet NPR gig or something.
Nardwar.
Oh yeah, that'd be great. Enough like strange references aside that we've probably lost a lot of you.
You're still here, right?
Yeah. Come along for a ride to South Korea because so pro bono activities by South Korean attorneys are generally managed by the Korean Bar Association.
The KBA.
As they're better known. So each local bar association requires individual attorneys registered at the KBA to spend 20 hours on pro bono matters per year. What's interesting, until about 3 to 4 years ago, there were only about one or two large firms that had attorneys or departments dedicated to pro bono activities. A couple years ago, 2016, only one large firm did not, I guess probably does not, they might have it now, have a pro bono department. So just in a couple years, it really expanded. I found a cool case. It's called Kim and Chang's Committee for Social Contribution, and they've done some really cool things for pro bono in Korea. Some interesting stuff. So they did. They held a national campaign to revise legal terminologies that are discriminatory towards people with disabilities.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And they help set up a legal academy for migrant women in Korea.
Whoa.
And I'm, you know, you and I have talked about off mic, possibly on mic, about like the issues with the inaccessibility of legal terminology and jargon, right?
100%. Yeah, I don't even know what it means. So good luck to you.
No, it's a learning curve right now. We're getting lectured right to us about it all. So it's
getting lectured in, you know, the literal sense, but also the figurative sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting. They're doing a 6-part lecture series targeted towards migrant women, focusing on these issues in Korea, Korean law. They opened a subsidiary printing company run by employees with severe disabilities, which is the first attempt to do that by a Korean law firm. So there's been rapid progression by law firms, but also innovative stuff, which is pretty cool.
Very cool.
So I'll put a pin in my little travel around the world looking at pro bono.
Thanks for taking us.
Because I want to hear some good news.
Okay.
What do you got for me?
All right. I'm going to preface. Do you want the good news first or the bad news first?
I don't know. Hit me with the. You know, you always want to start with the bad news.
Yeah,
so
let's start with the.
So apparently, this is the bad news, good news segment.
This is called bad news, good news. My bad news is to all CJAM listeners out there and supporters, CJAM is in danger of losing our primary source of funding.
Yeah.
Under new rules laid out by, we'll just call him Doug. The CJAM student fee voted on via referendum will be considered non-essential. What does this mean? Students will have the choice to opt out of CJAM operations. That's $5 per full-time undergrad student per semester. And if this change goes through, we may lose over half of our yearly funding, causing cutbacks to staff and the services we provide. So help keep CJAM alive. Contact your local MP, MPPs, and Doug's office. Demand campus radio be considered an essential service.
Absolutely.
Hear, hear. I'm gonna shift from that to my new section called Good News in Windsor. I got all sorts of interesting stuff for you.
All right.
Last time Brandon and I were on, we talked. We were talking about both domestic and commercial real estate, and we didn't really kind of get to dive into the commercial real estate aspect in ways that I would have liked, which is okay. Sometimes an hour just isn't enough. Anyway, I just wanted to tell all our listeners about a couple of cool community improvement plans that are happening across Windsor that I think are going to make really good strides for the city as a whole.
All right.
First thing I wanted to tell you about is the Ford City Community Improvement Plan. I got this from the CBC and the Windsor Star. This was put forward by the Ford City Redevelopment Committee. We're talking $250K from City Council for residential rehabilitation. So, residents of Ford City, listen up. There's a 50% matching grant for home renovations from $1,000 to $15,000. So they'll match half of whatever you put in.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, new facade, new porch, new kitchen, what have you. I don't know how much any of those that stuff costs, but the city will match half of it.
Are there restrictions on what you can use it for?
Barely. Not really. You just got to live in Ford City.
Where would they find this information? Just Google?
You can find this on the Windsor, the City of Windsor website. There's also, I mean, like there have been plenty of articles in the CBC and the Windsor Star. If you Google Ford City Community Improvement Plan, you will find it there. From a civil planning perspective, really cool idea too. The plan includes a vision to extend Ontario and Whelpton streets to help them connect with Walker Road. So that would be kind of bridging Walkerville and Ford City. Right now, it's a bit it's actually quite separated, and you got to go down Droulard to get to Ford City. So that would kind of be opening the doors.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, totally. I mean, other cool stuff that's happening. They're waiving the city's waiving municipal development fees, such as building permits. I mean, you still have to get them, but you don't have to pay for them. Up to a maximum of $50,000 for new developments.
Wow.
Yeah, bring it in.
Yeah,
there's also a property tax grant that encourages new development on underused properties by granting back the difference between existing municipal taxes on a property and the increased taxes once it's developed. This is getting a little jargony. What you need to know is that's good news about property tax.
Well, it's I mean, I wonder how this relates to what we talked about a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the vacancy rate being really low and if this kind of opens up some more housing opportunities for people.
Definitely it does. And this isn't just Ford City. You know, the downtown community improvement plan is by all accounts drawn rave reviews. It generated 60 mil in proposed new investment in close to 200 residential units. That's in less than a year of its announcement. Yeah, yeah. This is all projected stuff, but what you need to know is, yeah, it's like proposed development, but 200 residential units in the downtown core would be, you know, certainly not a miracle solution, but would go a good way to addressing the current housing crisis in Windsor. I mean,
they're
you know,
affordable.
Traveling west, the Sandwich neighborhood also has this community improvement plan, and the city council has recently approved developing these plans, not to say improve or approving them, but certainly developing these plans for business improvement throughout the city. Whispers are saying that investors are going to pull the trigger on a couple big projects. We're talking condo development on vacant industrial land, so don't worry, no one's getting pushed out. Talking vacant industrial land on Walker Road. Other investors are eyeing property on Droulard. There's talk about live-work arrangements where the business is located on the ground floor and business owners live above or behind the business. You know, also all sorts of cool stuff is happening.
Where so what are the sources of, for where you're seeing some
we're
of
talking
this
CBC, we're talking Windsor Star.
Okay.
Strangely, I read one article on iHeartRadio.ca, but I didn't trust it. I don't know what that is.
I
feel like
reputation.
Ryan Seacrest has a role in that, and yeah. It just gives me the heebie-jeebies. I got.
He's a robot.
He is a robot. We'll save him for tech news.
Yeah, we sure will. We sure will.
I got one other cool thing. We were talking about commercial real estate and the high incidence of vacancy in that. There have been changes to the Municipal Act that permit local governments to get rid of property tax rebates, which total 30% of the tax bill for vacant commercial buildings. Now, this is a bit more contentious. You know, our listeners, if we did a call-in session, I'm sure people would have a couple of different things to say on both sides of this debate. But basically, it's allowing the city to impose revoke a property tax rebate, which are currently being granted to vacant commercial buildings. 30% of the tax bill of vacant commercial buildings we're sending back to these landlords. In 2015, owners of 47 vacant business properties received $236,000 in property tax rebates. That's according to the city deputy treasurer, Janice Guthrie. And, call me crazy, but I don't necessarily think that if you're letting a commercial building sit vacant, you should necessarily get a property tax rebate.
No, I mean, I don't know. I'm not. I will never claim to be an expert. Maybe one day, but I don't know if that's where I'm going to go. But unless there's a good reason, you know, some sort of investment opportunity or some sort of plan. Yeah, if you're just sitting on it, waiting for the value to go up, and you're stifling opportunity, it seems like it could be a bit of a problem.
Don't stifle me or anyone.
Not in this economy.
Not in this economy. And now we're going to change gears on you, taking you to a new segment we like to call Tech News.
Tech News.
If you're just joining us, this is Pro Bono Radio featuring a new segment we like to call Tech News.
Tech News. So, in the investigation into international pro bono led me to that conversation we had about South Korea, how they were looking for some innovative ways to address challenges that certain people face. If you have the pro bono services, but they're inaccessible to the people that need them, you're missing the mark. So I was looking on AmericanBar.org. I can't say that. AmericanBar.org. And they had some really cool things that were happening around the States. And I found a few. There's one called The Den. So it's Debt and Eviction Navigator. But what this is an app. So Pro Bono Net, which is a website, partnered with JASEV Legal Services for the Elderly in Queens. So they developed a new app that enables social workers, so not lawyers, but social workers, to perform a quick legal screening for homebound or disabled seniors.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it helps with at-risk Queens seniors with their emergency issues, particularly housing, consumer debt, and elder abuse cases. And as we know, there's significant barriers there. Maybe public transit isn't great. Maybe they don't have an opportunity to go to the offices. Maybe there's only one office. I'm not sure what the situation is in Queens, but that extrapolated to other places. I really like that.
Yeah, that's super cool.
What that shows too as well is that a lot of these needs aren't in their own silo. So like legal needs, sometimes there's intersectionality between housing needs, poverty, things like that, disabilities. And so if you have different groups working together to provide good services so people aren't missed, I think that's really good.
Absolutely.
Here's a fun one.
Hit me.
There is this organization called One Justice.
One with O-N-E or the number
like
one?
One like a One Republic.
Yeah, one. Like
everyone's favorite Timberland produced. Exactly. So they drive around blasting that. Oh, no, sorry. That's a different bus. Oh. So the Justice Bus Project takes teams of attorneys and law student volunteers to set up free legal clinics for low-income Californians living in rural or isolated communities.
I love that. I would join the Just Bus.
Yeah, that's what they probably call it, the Just Bus. And so, yeah, legal assistance, low-income veterans, vulnerable seniors, children with disabilities, low-wage workers, immigrant youth, which aren't, you know, may not be right downtown in the urban areas.
For sure. California is an awfully big place with more citizens than Canada.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Pressing legal needs abound.
I'd imagine so, yeah. And so, which is kind of interesting here, they work with law schools, law firms, kind of like how the University of Windsor works with CLA and LAW. And yeah, so I thought that was cool too, kind of solving problems, right?
Definitely, yeah. Legal activism takes on many forms.
Yeah, and I found one last one, which I thought was interesting as well, talking about unique challenges. So there's a domestic violence initial hearing remote center. This is out of D.C. So it allows those seeking orders of protection to obtain one via a video conference, which I thought is great because, you know, you can imagine the unique issues with confidentiality and also security. You know, traveling to these places might not be safe, or you might not want to, people might not want to know, or people to know where they are.
Definitely.
So you could do it from your phone or you could do it from your laptop. And yeah, so I was really encouraged. It kind of goes with the theme of good news that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
This episode, I was encouraged from this stuff that people are really trying to, you know, break the mold on what these services look like.
Absolutely. And the law is a notoriously stuffy and antiquated industry.
Yeah, the pace in which it moves is not lightning fast.
Small anecdote for you. A friend of ours was applying for a job within the legal community, and it asked him to fax them his application.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there going forward is absolutely a ton of opportunities in which we can use technology to streamline the legal process, increase accessibility, you know, all those things that the internet can provide anyway in other industries when you think about the role that the law plays or can play in any kind of average citizen's life, you know, anything we can do to make that easier or make that more kind of fluid or accessible.
It seems, and you're telling me that you have some options. They're not necessarily legal, but they're things that are happening in Windsor, which does, I think, contribute to like a culture of ingenuity, and there's some exciting stuff coming, right?
Definitely. This is a hybrid segment of the last two segments I'm calling Good News Tech News.
I'm disappointed we don't have a cool intro song captures that idea, but
well, I mean, if I, you know, if I had my way, we'd just be playing an hour of Grimes up here, but you know,
that's another show that we can dream of.
That's another show. It's called
Sponsored
Me Driving
Elon
in My Car.
Tesla.
Yeah, so we do have some cool stuff coming to Windsor in terms of tech gigs. I don't know if my listeners know, our listeners know, but Quicken Loans is coming to Windsor. They're a Detroit-based firm. You may know them from the Quicken Loans Arena, where those cursed Cleveland Cavaliers play, who knocked our Toronto Raptors out of the playoffs multiple years
Not
in a row.
Year. That
Not
jobs for like the Charlotte year. Hornets or something.
Yeah, we'll see. But anyway, Quicken Loans is actually a Detroit-based firm, and they're bringing at least 50 jobs with the potential to expand to up to 150. These are IT jobs. They're going into the downtown landmark of the Old Fish Market on Chatham. Interestingly, was originally built in 1912 as an auto showroom. But I just thought this was really cool because it's showing signs of greater integration with the Detroit IT sector. And there are a lot of advantages to kind of having a cross-border company, as I'm sure a lot of residents of Windsor will know. Detroit also has an really cool intellectual property and like patent office that the University of Windsor dual degree students can have the opportunity to engage with. So that's pretty neat. And then cool. Shifting it back over to Walkerville, a company called Shopivo. Don't know. Just read it. Never said it. Shipaivo. They're beginning operations in the 1700 block of Walker Road. They're starting with 25 employees, and they've talked about Windsor's emergence as a growing tech hub and how it's continuing to gain momentum. The CEO of Shipaivo said, we found Windsor has more qualified people than it gets credit for. Shouts out to all you in Windsor. And they looked in the Toronto area, but a lot of qualified people don't want to be in a big city. I can think of two. They're behind the mics speaking to you now.
Me.
Us.
And I was just thinking, you know, some people compared to some of the other shows that we've done or other students have done on this project or might be like, why are they talking about jobs and the economy and things like that? But there's doesn't happen in isolation, and there is kind of like an undercurrent and like uniting factor behind all the things that we're talking about, which is the economic health of the city, opportunities for people, opportunities for living, and then the unique like legal issues that arise from having challenges.
Absolutely, yeah. As a city evolves, so too do the legal needs, and you know, the legal needs in Windsor in this time, in this moment, are you know, quite specific in terms of relating to housing, relating to unemployment, relating to a lot of specific women's issues. And yeah, I mean, that's not to say that we won't erase legal needs by bringing in more jobs and building more housing, but certainly we can kind of evolve them to be ones that are less less dire and less super pressing on your immediate quality of life.
Yeah, and it seems, you know, some of the research suggests and other, you know, anecdotal examples of cities that do struggle economically, it exacerbates issues that might already be there or there for other reasons.
Totally.
And so I think like in any macro conversation, when you're talking about anything that has to do with society, it's like you do have to look at all these different angles. So it is interesting. I'm glad you brought that stuff up because it's, you know, there's some good news.
There's some good news. And we just want all our regular listeners to know that, yes, we may be from Toronto, but we are jumping into Windsor with both feet.
Of course.
Doing some deep dives.
Oh, yeah.
Love
the
Rose City.
Oh, yeah. So do I.
We're going to take it to some commercials, but stick with us on Pro Bono Radio.
The Windsor Youth Center is a free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor-Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, housing applications, apartment searches, and resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Saturday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at thewindsoryouthcenter.org or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Every week, CJAM compiles top 30 and specialty charts with the most played new music at the station. Find our charts in the new section at cjam.ca or at earshot-online.com. Thursdays at 5 p.m., tune in to the Top 12 Countdown for an overview of the overall charting albums. We are breaking new ground in sound and keeping Windsor Detroit Radio in a constant state of redefinition. CJAM 99.1 FM.
And we're back. So, Graham, we've talked a lot about what's happening with pro bono in a macro sense. We've been talking about what's happening internationally, what organizations are doing. But it has me thinking about what lawyers kind of in a individual sense are either expected to do or should be doing, especially as somebody who might be a lawyer one day. What's expected? What's the norm?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sorry, folks. I was just leaning in on the mic a little hot there. You know, it's funny. Going through all this research, I can't help but think kind of about, as a future lawyer, what will be expected of me. And, you know, you do worry that it's a bit of, I certainly worry that it's lip service in a way, and that pro bono is more so something performed by law students to pad the resumes and not necessarily an integral part of the profession. We all know what people say about lawyers.
They say a lot of mean things.
A lot of mean things.
And a lot of jokes that I'm sure we heard.
Going all
the run-up.
Going all the way back to Shakespeare. Did you know there's actually a line in, I think it's, I don't know, one of the, you know, King something, the number, where they said, first we kill all the lawyers.
Yeah, like, come on, man.
Like, whoa.
You know, I think that's a bit much. But I think times have changed, maybe.
It's a little heavy-handed.
It's a little much. What you just said, though, actually made me think. You know, a lot of us at university like to get involved in things that aren't in the classroom. So organizations that we feel are beneficial, that speak to us, like we're doing right now with Pro Bono Students Association. And even now, it's really tough. You can get bogged down in your work. You can get bogged down in all the things you need to do, applying for jobs, you know, deadlines for things, and not want to do things for free or do volunteer or extracurriculars. You just want to get focused on what the task at hand. And I wonder how that forms the experience of, like, lawyers, you know, who have a lot of things going on.
For sure. I think it's I think it would be tough to I think it would be tough in a couple of ways. Number one, to do just mentally do something for free that you get paid to do. I'm not excusing the behavior. I'm just saying I can understand how some people would think like that. Mm-hmm. Or even just, you know, so you're grinding away 10, 11 hour days over at the firm to finish that day and then continue to do legal work on your spare time.
Yeah.
Can be a bit of a hard sell, but I think what a lot of people would be overlooking in that is that by virtue of being a lawyer, you have, and I'm certainly not ego tripping to all our listeners out there, but you do have like a very specific, almost elite skill set. And if you don't do it, who's going to do it?
Well, I think the nature of the legal system, with it not being accessible in a lot of ways in terms of language, in terms of process, in terms of income, things like that, it's like, yeah, we do have a skill set that makes it easier for people to navigate through the system. And it also, we have a skill set that gives us sort of like a burden or responsibility. Not a burden because it sounds bad, but we do have responsibility to make sure, you know, like people who are going through the criminal justice system, especially people that might, who would take up the pro bono services, like a lot of things we were talking about. It's like nobody wants to be in the criminal justice system. So it's like we have a responsibility to help that. That's my opinion, personally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing, I'm glad you said criminal justice system, because in doing research, the both of us kind of went and started to look at a lot of Canadian firms, started to try and find, you know, what are individual lawyers doing in their pro bono work outside of some like organization, or what are firms doing as a whole? And a lot of the kind of, I don't want to say excuses and throw these guys under the bus, but a lot of firms seemed to respond to we're not a criminal law firm. And we're not a family law firm.
Sure. So, yeah.
So what could we do?
Yeah.
Which is obviously there are underserved populations in literally every legal area. I remember we actually had a really good talk, and his name is escaping me, but that's okay because the story stands. a civil litigator came and spoke to us, and his version of pro bono was going after cops and people within the criminal justice system who had wronged people.
Sounds like a movie. That sounds like the way you put it. Like,
yeah.
He kind of
seemed like a movie, that guy. Yeah. But you know what I mean? He was a civil litigator and he was still able to use his specific skill set to net positive outcomes. You know what I mean? Like, I think across every single area of law, there is a need. People need help. And just the fact that you don't practice criminal law, I don't think I'm from all the way up here on my high horse. Gives you an excuse to shirk your responsibilities, which is really interesting. So I was on CanadianLawyer.com, fascinating website, especially for all you non-lawyers out there. You guys are going to love it if you want to check it out. Anyway, they were kind of talking about pro bono versus legal aid, which I guess we should clear up real quick.
Yeah, I kind of, but don't really know the difference.
The simplest way,
so
it's
you can tell me.
Yeah, the simplest way it's been explained to me is it's essentially a question of state aid versus philanthropy.
Oh, that clicks. Yeah,
yeah,
makes sense.
Legal aid is government-funded legal assistance. Pro bono work is people working for free, generally speaking. For a lot of people, a lot of lawyers will accept, and a lot won't actually, will accept a legal aid certificate. So basically, if you do qualify for legal aid, you get given what is effectively a voucher, and then you take that to a firm and pay for their services through that voucher. They're still getting paid. And admittedly, they're probably charging less for the same service than they would if you were just paying them outright.
So that's where the overlap may.
Yeah.
May
yeah, there's rise. Definitely, and pro bono isn't, you know, purely, I think like the modern conception of pro bono isn't purely just working for free. It kind of manifests itself in a lot of ways in terms of discounted rates or not charging for certain services and stuff like that. But generally speaking, legal aid is where the government is giving you money to pay a lawyer with. And pro bono is a lawyer doing something out of the goodness of their heart. But I should add that no firm is obliged to accept legal aid certificates. A colleague of ours, classmate, can I call her a colleague?
Sure. I mean, that sounds better. It sounds more interesting. Maybe not better. It just sounds more interesting. So I'm going to go with one of Graham's colleagues.
A colleague of mine, a colleague of ours, worked in a small town in the in Bruce or Gray County, somewhere up near Tobermory. And she was saying there were 6 law firms around in town. And I don't mean big ones, but just basically 6 places you could go to seek legal advice. And 1 accepted legal aid certificates out of the 6.
Okay.
So a lot of the time, you know, even by virtue of accepting one, you're already kind of helping people out. But anyway, let me get back on track a little bit. Actually, we were never off track. We're always on track.
We've been on track.
Here at Pro Bono Radio. So they were trying to figure out, in an effort to decide whether governments should increase or decrease budgets for legal aid, trying to find out how much pro bono work was being done. And apparently, it's really hard to get data on this. Generally speaking, law firms are under no obligation to disclose how much pro bono they do. There's not a lot of ways to kind of check up on the veracity of their statistics.
I guess, and even the use. I mean, you'd have to have like a user survey or something, right? Like,
yeah, totally. What I thought was interesting, though, is there's an oscillation between legal aid and pro bono generally. And kind of over the 20th century, now into the 21st, 1/5 the way there.
Getting there.
Can't wait to see the 22nd. as there's kind of an ebb and flow in the delivery mechanisms of legal assistance, and where contributions towards legal aid have declined, interest amongst lawyers in pro bono has increased. And vice versa, which is interesting because it you don't really wish it was like that. You know, I would like to see both going up at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. That's the ultimate, right? That where it's both going at the same time. But there is an encouraging piece there, right? Where the profession is willing to step up when the funding isn't there or when the need is there. I'm not sure, you know, that as kind of like a general concept, I'm not sure how it looks on the ground or anything, but you know, that is encouraging if we want to take a silver lining, you know?
Yeah. It's also, it's funny cause it seems to be hard to sustain, legal aid funding. We're caught in a cycle where, the government I'm speaking mostly about the federal government, but also the provincial, increases funding and then receives some sort of public blowback in terms of our hard tax dollars at work, et cetera, et cetera. And then,
this is your perception of the,
this is my perception. And this is also according to, Canadian lawyer.com.
Oh, they mentioned that.
Mentioned that. I'm not.
So you're going out on a limb on one of your textbook.
No, I can see
Graham rants.
I can see
that's
lot.
A Brandon move.
I can access a lot of sources up here on my high horse.
Yeah,
yeah.
You have to.
I can
see.
I can see.
If you're going to be an IR, there's a duty to have sources.
and it's So they tried to do this big survey in 2014, talking to firms, finding out about their pro bono, taking a look under the hood. Not a lot of respondents.
Mm-mm.
No,
I found that too.
Yeah, I was looking at one where seven large firms across Canada responded. How about you? What'd you find?
Four.
Oh, wow.
It was four. Their data showed a decrease over the past. I mean, this was 2016 data. That was like the most recent I could find in my search. But there was like a drop in the amount of hours that lawyers were doing pro bono, but I don't know if there's an increase in legal aid like we were talking about, but yeah, it was such a small sample size. I think they're bigger ones, but yeah, only four Canadian firms actually took part in that survey.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Other things I was reading was that like firms, even if they did require it, required an average of 15 hours a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, really asking those lawyers to reach deep into their pockets to offer up an hour a month of pro bono.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wonder again, you know, like we were tongue in cheek, you know, like talking about what goes into it, what that looks like, right? When you are working those hours, 11, 12 plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Where the hours go. I found something interesting, actually, about going back to the international conversation.
Yeah.
It says, so they started the index there. They started tracking in 2014. I don't know how many, doesn't actually say how many law firms there may have been one, but there may have been 100. I don't know. China's has grown 211%. And so their average is 37 hours annually.
Hey.
And that's apparently similar to Australia, England, and Wales, which is...
shouts out to the Welshmen.
I mean, the average of the four here is 39.2 in Canada. So that's, you know, that's where it is.
Mm-hmm. We got some other issues in terms of being a lawyer in China can generally be a little treacherous depending on who you're representing.
Sure, yeah, I'm not even gonna weigh in on any of the issues there, but I can imagine it's much different.
Yeah, I'm actually traveling to China in April, visiting an old friend in Shanghai. So
is he a lawyer in Shanghai?
He's not a lawyer. He's some sort of modern 21st century travel agent, I believe.
That sounds like you made that up for radio.
I didn't. I swear to God. No one will have any way of verifying this, but I'm just asking you all out there to trust me.
Moving on from your friend that
sure.
You met up.
He's real.
What do you think the biggest challenge for you as a person becoming a lawyer in providing pro bono services?
For me, like looking ahead?
Yeah. Once you're out a couple years in. If you had to look look ahead? Or even now, I mean, like kind of trying to work that stuff in. What do you think is like, what do you find is the biggest challenge in trying to make broom outside of the things you have to do?
I truly think like just the, even the phrase make room, like that in itself can often be difficult. I think even as a law student, both of us are volunteers at community legal aid as well. Mm-hmm. We're intake support workers and we do this. And that is a serious struggle in and of itself. I feel myself being stretched really thin.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can only imagine, especially in the early years of your career, it's a shame because you're simultaneously probably the most idealistic at that time, yet being put through the ringer the most. I'm not sure if our listeners know, but articling, which is after you finish law school, before you're officially called to the bar, as it is notorious as a kind of, I would argue, institutional hazing exercise. Where
it depends where you are. And,
yeah.
And, you know, which firms.
Depends on your firm. But and
rite of passage. That's the
sure.
That's
I had to do it, and so do you.
Yeah.
I think that's really difficult. And then the first, they say, generally speaking, 4 to 6 years following that are very intense, and that's also kind of when you're starting a. I mean, I don't know who you are or what you're doing, but for me, you know, I would imagine mid-30s probably. Trying to settle down a little bit, you know,
a little gram couple, or little
couple gram or gramettes,
running. Think of that. Yeah,
kicking around, you know, and yeah, truly just to find the time, which is funny too, because as we go through law school, there's a lot of, you know, quite thankfully, a lot of resources available to us in terms of like mental health support. There's a lot of discussion of like stress and, you know, anxiety and stuff like that. So I think it would be, you know, it's hard to take care of yourself and, try and help out other people at the same time.
I think you nailed the nail on the head. That's where my brain is. I think the thing is like, depending on why you're here at law school or what you think the legal profession should look like, you know, if you do believe in helping people who need it, I think you have to just, you know, try to hold on to that and really keep that perspective. And I think, you know, if you do hold onto that idea, you can. I think also the point you made too, making time or making room or whatever. That is a negative way to put it. If you say,
yeah.
if you say it's not, you're not making, it's just as important, right?
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, so like when we're at the legal clinic or when we're doing things like this, it's like, it's not, these things are just as important, especially the legal clinic, right? Like
yeah.
that's people's lives. And so if you can always kind of hold on to that, you know, not prioritizing the importance of things, I think you can maybe.
Yeah, the importance or kind of the disposability of these things, right?
Yeah.
Like, I definitely I think that's a great point. Kind of a reframing and not viewing them as something I'm doing out of the goodness of my heart, but rather something I'm doing because it's the right thing to do, because I'm obliged to do it, or I should feel obliged mm-hmm. to do it, given. My expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And for all our listeners out there who are like, wow, these guys are getting into it with some law school stuff. If you know a lawyer, go ask them if they do any pro bono. Subtly yeah. nudge them towards a little bit of it if you know one.
Yeah, that would be great for everyone.
Next time you're forking out your hard-earned dollars to a lawyer, ask them, hey, do you ever do any of this for free? Not for me per se. I mean, maybe, but probably not. But for the disenfranchised, for people who are not being adequately served by our current system. And I do have to say in doing some research on the Canadian lawyer website, which does filter legal news through a pretty thick lawyer bias. It's talking about all this, you know, low turnout for the survey. It's talking about pro bono and the value of pro bono and how a lot of lawyers
describe pro bono work as some of the most memorable part of what they do. But this paragraph wraps up with, there is a lot of enthusiasm in the profession to do pro bono, and those who are keen should be supported and encouraged by their firms and colleagues. But as the overwhelming results of our survey show, law societies should never make pro bono mandatory. They just
throw that in.
Yeah, they just drop that in at the end, and I kind of thought, like, well, I wasn't even thinking of it, but now that I'm thinking of it, why not? You know, we are... Lawyers are one of those unique...
Should never.
Yeah, should never, according to lawyers.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, lawyers are one of those unique industries where they're almost entirely self-governed. You know who disciplines lawyers? Other lawyers.
True. There's more teeth to them.
Okay,
than,
yeah. I'm not saying it's like...
But you make a good point.
I'm not saying it's entirely like no rules cavalier, but I just mean to say that, you know, in other industries, especially industries that affect the public, like law does, you know, we do have kind of independent counsels and watchdogs, and
which in itself isn't necessarily bad. I think it's just it just points to the responsibility that I think individuals in the industry or the profession have, and I think. And I think, you know, for the most part, as you know, kind of like, you know, maybe we joke about, you know, that the fact that they're governed, you know, by themselves or whatever. It's like, I think lawyers take that really seriously though.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
True. That's true.
And so, and you know, if they were to go really easy on everyone, or if they were, you know, to not strive for things like pro bono and stuff like that, it's like the public would know, you know, the public would know this, and like,
yeah.
And so I think with that, you know, taking it seriously and responsibility, there's room there for to be able to.
No, you're right. I'm not saying we're like operating entirely behind this curtain.
Yeah.
But I just mean I thought that was interesting.
Your point's definitely valid. Yeah. Just try to give the, you know, just even the other.
Yeah,
the other side,
yeah.
Or they, you know, another.
Yeah,
another
put a different gloss on it.
But yeah, Graham, it's been pretty interesting, this little dive, you know, and we've been pretty the other shows that we've had, we've looked directly into a specific project, a specific issue, and kind of getting really into the nitty gritty, which has been fun. But it's kind of nice to take a step back and be like, why are we doing this? How should we be doing this? And what can we learn about other from other places?
For sure. And I think there's, a lot of the time when you're doing something volunteer, when you're, you know, helping out in some capacity, you don't kind of take the self-critical lens of like, okay, yeah, we're doing this, but could we be doing this better? Could we be doing this differently? Like, how effective is what we're doing?
And a lot of the people that get served by these programs or whatever, or initiatives and things like that, all already struggle by not having some don't have a strong voice in society for various reasons. So it's if you know, these services aren't good, you know, they're, you know, we might not know, you know,
yeah.
Or we will. They'll tell us, but maybe, you know, it's just like sometimes those voices aren't the ones that people are listening to.
It's true, and I think in not just legal aid and pro bono work within the law, but a lot of the time with, you know, any sort of philanthropic charitable thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, you serve, you're aiming to serve these people, these underserved people, but you don't kind of end it with a. You know, like a survey of like,
how did it go?
You know, it's like, well, you got it.
Well, you got it. And we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it's always good to take a step back and kind of, and learn from our own actions and from other places that are doing cool things.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm glad we agree on that.
Agree, we do. We agree.
We do indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this week on Pro Bono Radio. I have been and still am Graham Hutchings.
And I'm Brandon Frigamini.
So remember that you can listen to CJAM 99.1 anytime, anywhere, any way by going to cjam.ca. I was going to hit you with the three W's, but you don't need to do that. If you want to tune in next week on the same bat time, same bat channel, if that's Fridays noon to 1, you'll hear from Surratt and Akil, two colleagues of ours. And remember, folks, whether you're a pro, a beau, or a no, you're welcome here on CJAM.
Have a great Friday.
Cheers.
Bye.